Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Silver and Black Today. Your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back. Hour number two, Silver and Black Today here on this Wednesday. It's hump day, everybody. Powered by our good friends, Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Get in on the conversation. The number to call in and be a part of the show with Scott Culbranson, myself, and my guest co-host today, of course, Hondo Carpenter from Sports Illustrated's Raider Maven website, is 702-365-9200. Want to hear what you think about the Trent Brown situation, the Raiders, what they do on offensive line. How concerned are you about that offensive line and what they're going to do about it coming up on the season? All right. Now, Hondo, I want to talk about this because it's interesting. We've seen in the NBA really a change where players have much more say. Now, of course, it's smaller rosters, smaller organizations overall than we see in the NFL. But after talking about the Deshaun Watson situation over the last few weeks, I'm interested to hear what Raider Nation has to say about this as NFL fans. Should players have more say? You know, these teams are owned. They're owned by billionaire owners for the most part who run it just like they do a company. They are the owners of the company. Deshaun Watson is upset from what we understand that he was told he would be included in on the selection of the new general manager in Houston. He was not. Got upset about it, and also wants to be a part of the coaching process. So, here, Hondo, you know, what kind of control is the right amount of control? These are businesses, and these guys are getting paid. Deshaun Watson gets paid handsomely to be one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. Does that mean he should have a say in how the organization runs and who should be general manager, coach, and so on?
I think that every player, like every employee at every company, should get as much influence as the owner values them at. So let me give you an example. You know, my father was a business owner, and you bring in your key employees before you make key decisions because their opinion matters to you. So if you think Deshaun Watson is your franchise quarterback that you're going to win with and he's your guy, I think you absolutely have to include those guys. You don't have to, but I'm saying it's a wise leadership. I've got employees that work for me. Mm-hmm. And you better know, there are some employees I don't ever ask their opinion on any decision they make. Then there are some I ask always what their opinion is on something. To me, I don't think you can just say, does any one player? If Michael Jordan's your guy, I mean, if anybody watched that series on ESPN, and man, wasn't that done well about the Bulls? Yeah. I mean, you see how Michael Jordan was mistreated. That's ridiculous. But if you think Deshaun Watson that guy for you, you got to give him that right.
Well, and I think, too, heart of the issue, and again, this is all secondhand. We don't have direct knowledge that this actually happened because we haven't heard the exact side of the story. But the bigger issue here is the loss of trust, right? So he was told by the owner. Now, that's different. When an owner says, hey, you're going to be involved, and then goes out and does it without you, the expectation from Deshaun Watson to me was not out of line. Now, but there are people I see out there as part of the discussion, Hondo, who say, absolutely, you know, if you have a franchise player, they have to be included in that. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I'd love to hear other views why you disagree with me, but I just don't see it. Like, you're getting paid to do your job. You go do your job. There are several players in the history of sports who have the gravitas, who have the control to do that. And we've seen it. We've seen it with LeBron. We saw it with Michael Jordan, as you referenced. And in football, occasionally you'll see it too. Aaron Rodgers had some say in the coaching situation. But I just wonder, you know, this is, you know, you have the players' union. The players' union, every time they do a collective bargaining, fights with the league to make sure they're representing their players as a whole around all sorts of issues, including safety and representation and all that stuff. And each individual player is paid, to play the game. So you're right. I think it is individual. And if you decide to allow an employee slash a player to be involved in it, I just hear a lot of players out there too, not just in football, but across baseball and basketball, and even in other sports like soccer, who are demanding and saying, we need to be involved in these things. And I don't know that you can demand it. I think it has to be a relationship development, and it's a one-on-one situation.
I think, Scott, you can look right there in Houston with James Harden, you know, who tried to force it, and the Houston Rockets were like, listen, we're not giving you away. So if somebody wants you and they're willing to pay for you, we're willing to move you, but we're not giving you away. To me, I think it's all about what the player, you know, who the player is. Let's give an example. If you're LaMarcus Joyner and you go walking into Mike Mayock and John Gruden's office and saying, hey, I want a voice on who the next defensive coordinator is, they laugh. But when Jimmy Johnson was coach of the Dallas Cowboys and Emmitt Smith fell asleep, Jimmy Johnson didn't care, never even bothered to wake him up, but ends up cutting a guy, a third string running back, who fell asleep. And he said, well, Emmitt did. And he goes, yep, and you don't produce like Emmitt. Let's not pretend that who you are and your ability to perform doesn't carry a bigger weight.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's just an interesting discussion because, you know, I love the fact that today's athlete is much more in tune with how the business runs, because most of these guys are also brands in of themselves, right?
Yes.
So they know and they run. So they know better business sense, all of them from top to bottom, of how things run, right? And so I understand that, look, you know, you want some respect too. You want to, if you're told that you are the future of this franchise and you are the franchise, then why wouldn't I be involved in saying who my coach is? I just think there's a slippery slope there, though, because, you know, how much is too much? And again, the Deshaun Watson I use as a case because I think he has a grievance. The grievance, at least from his point of view, his side, and we haven't heard both sides, was that Cal McNair told him he would be involved and then he didn't involve him. So I think that's where it's interesting. But it's just interesting because there's been a kind of a dynamic change in professional sports. You even see it sometimes in amateur sports or Olympic sports, where players are having, they feel as though from the get-go they have much more of a voice. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, but to me it's sort of like an advisory role, right? Because it's not, businesses aren't a democracy. The employees don't, unless they're owned by the employees, they don't get to just say, hey, well, we want this, and if we don't get this, something bad's going to happen, to your point about what we saw with James Harden. And so it's just an interesting discussion to me because of how the dynamic has changed over the years.
Totally agree with you, Scott. And again, I go back and say this. To the people that don't like players having an influence, I'm fine with that. I don't have an issue with that. But I also hope you understand that players get what they earn. And you let them earn it. And so if a player plays at a level, if you're the Golden State Warriors, there's going to be things that you consult Steph Curry about that you don't the guy who's at the bottom of your bench.
Right.
And I just think that people need to understand, you know, a player doesn't just deserve that right because he's a player. You got to earn and play to earn that right. Nobody's entitled to have that role. But man, when you earn it, it's something precious to have.
Do you think, I mean, now, again, let's just put aside that Deshaun Watson claims that he was lied to. But is Deshaun Watson at the level, do you think that he has that level of input or should have that level of input?
Well, I think with the money you pay him says you feel that way. So
yeah,
again, no. It goes, no, I mean, has Deshaun Watson's resume up to now say he should get that? Probably not. But the money you paid him said absolutely. You're married to that guy.
Yeah.
He's your guy. So if I'm the owner in Houston, you better believe I'm bringing Deshaun in. Because if I didn't believe in him, I wouldn't have paid him that kind of money. Now, that organization is so dysfunctional that they very well could have paid him that money and not felt that way about him, in which case it just proves that it's a train wreck.
Yeah. But then on the other side of that coin, Hondo, if a player isn't consulted and doesn't ask for it, is that somehow a slight? Even if it's a franchise player, right? If it's Patrick Mahomes, and I'm not saying that there's any need there for that, but let's say it's Patrick Mahomes, and the Chiefs go out and they have to replace Andy Reid because he's retired, and they don't ask him, and he doesn't demand it, then is that considered a slight, or do you think that it's got to be, as a business leader, as someone who's invested in, as you said, married to somebody, whoever that player is, do you think they owe it to that player to do that anyway, even if it's unproactive from their end?
Yes, and I want to go back and explain what I mean by this.
Okay.
I don't care how much you're paying a guy. If he's one of your key leaders, he's one of your key guys, your key components, you better believe you bring them in. Now, it doesn't mean you're asking them their opinion, but you're bringing them in telling you, hey, this is what I'm thinking. This is where I'm going. Here's what I identify as the need. You want to bring as many people into your circle as trust as you can, because that's how you get buy-in as an organization. That's how you get people. One of the things that Nick Saban does, and I have, you know, privilege because of again, Nick being back for so long. Nick Saban, everyone thinks, yeah, he's a dictator, and he is. He absolutely is the Nick-tator. He's earned it. But he'll bring his guys in. He talks to them. He brings his captains in. They're constantly in Nick's office. He's constantly selling them so they're able to go to the other players and say, hey, we know what's going on. We're buying in. My good buddy, Butch Jones, who is the head coach at Tennessee, is now at Arkansas State. When Brian Kelly left the Cincinnati Bearcats, players were angry, mad, all of it. When Butch Jones left Cincinnati to go to Tennessee, there were hugs and tears because throughout the whole process, Brian Kelly, yep, not going anywhere, gone. Butch brought him in and said, guys, I'm going to listen to people. I promise I'm not going to just jump to take any job. It's going to have to be the right one, but I'm going to keep the captains in the loop. So you may remember, or you may not, but he was at Cincinnati. He interviewed at one school, told his captains, I'm going to go interview there. Came back, said, nope, I want to be here. Then he was at Colorado. And there was a big reports out of Colorado with ESPN personalities. He was taking the Buffalo job. Nope, he told his captains, I'm not taking it. Comes back. Then Tennessee. Then he called and told them, yeah, I am taking it. And when he left, the people cheered. Why? He kept his captains in the loop. I think there's a level of successful master-level leaders who understand the importance of keeping your key people in the loop. You've got to do it. Regardless of what you pay them, if they're a key guy, you keep them in the loop.
No doubt about it. And that's the one thing, too. I do a lot of reading about leadership and business. And one of the things that I've been seeing a lot as a common theme, and this goes into private sector, nothing to do with sports, but I think it would be wise for NFL owners and those that run organizations to pay attention to, and that is that no longer are bosses supposed to be or should be those dictators. Bosses should be coaches, meaning that they're there. Yes, they have to make decisions, and sometimes those are above your pay grade depending where you're at. At the same time, by coaching and listening, active listening to others. Now, if you can listen to a player, you can tell the player, hey, listen, we want to hear you. We want to sit down and talk to you about this coaching hire. We want to talk to you about the GM. We want to talk to you about this free agent acquisition we're going to make on your side of the ball. That does not mean you have a decision to make or that you're going to make the decision for us, but we really want to listen to the positives, the negatives, what you think of what we're going to do, and we will include that in our decision-making process. I think to me, that is something that I would love to see more of in the NFL because, again, that's not a player demanding anything or saying that if you don't do this, then I'm going to be a malcontent. What that is actually people who are invested in what you're doing. And in this case, on a football team, you're trying to win a Super Bowl. If you're going to do that, it behooves you to listen to those people to make sure you at least get their feedback, because that can make you and help you, I should say, make the most informed decision possible.
Totally agree with you, Scott. And I think it goes back to anything. I remember one time my dad, as you know, was a businessman. And he sat down his children and talked about a decision he was making in the business. He wasn't asking our permission. He was just keeping us in the loop. We were his kids. We didn't want to hear about it from other people. I think that's just being a smart leader. That's just being intelligent. So, with all the money they paid Deshaun, whether or not they promised him is irrelevant to me. The point is, you paid him that kind of money. You owe it to him to come in and say, listen, buddy, we're going to make a decision. Here's what we think we need out of a defense. Don't let him make the decision. He's the quarterback or whatever the decision may be. You're going to make it. But what do you think? What are some things you think we need to look at? You do that because when you enlarge your circle of influence, then all of a sudden, again, not being a Bible thumper, but my faith is important. The Bible says there's counsel. There's wise counsel in many wise voices. You bring those guys in who are invested, who are bleeding, sweating, and everything else. Bring those guys in and let them have an opinion.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Great discussion, Hondo, as always. I appreciate it, man. Okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to take a break. When we come back, Lawrence will jump on with me for the Q-tip. We'll talk through some of those subjects that he's going to talk about. And then Hondo will rejoin me about 3:40, and then we'll welcome in Vinny Bonsignor. We'll talk about the day's news and catch up with Vinny. You're with Hondo. You're with Scott here on Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here's your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back, Silver and Black Today, here on Raider Nation Radio. Of course, always powered by our good friend, Sam and Ash. Injury attorney, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Rejoining me now is my good friend, Q Myers. And Q, you know, we talked about all throughout the search for the Raiders defensive coordinator, kind of a fan favorite candidate emerged. And that, of course, was Wade Phillips. And you got a chance, and you can listen to Q's podcast, his Raiders podcast, Locked On Raiders podcast. Go subscribe to it wherever you get it. It's the best thing to listen to first thing in the morning. And then, of course, he also hosts the Locked On Bets podcast. Make sure you go to that one too. But Q, you're able to talk to Coach Phillips for your radio show and for the podcast. What was kind of the takeaway for folks after talking to him about the Raiders position and his desire to get back into coaching?
Well, you know, it was funny because, you know, I obviously wanted to get into that conversation and really kind of deep dive into, you know, hey, how interested in the Raiders job were you? But I think as a guy who's been around the NFL as long as he has, he wasn't going to be very, you know, like he wasn't going to go out and just say, yeah, I really wanted that job, especially now that Gus Bradley's already been named the defensive coordinator. I think that's just a respect factor. But, you know, he did let it be known that, hey, I want to coach, you know, and I asked him about the tweet that he put out about the 4-3 and the 3-4. And, you know, and he was like, man, that's so overrated. Basically, you know, not to his exact words, but basically saying like, hey, man, it's very easy to do. It's not a hard transition. Every time I've done it, you know, the team has gone to the playoffs. And, you know, I mean, he just rolled out why some people think that it's so difficult, but it's really not. And, you know, he's been around long enough and he, you know, just kind of put it out there that, hey, my, you know, my resume speaks for itself. You know, the funniest thing about the conversation that I had with him, I asked him the question about, you know, just these defenses. Are these offenses that are continuing to evolve in the NFL? And that was something John Gruden had pointed out. You know, he said the next guy's got to know how to go up against the Lamar Jacksons, the Patrick Mahomes, you know, the Josh Allens, those kind of guys as their offenses are evolving. So I asked him about the Chiefs. I said, how would you try to slow down that machine that is the Chiefs? And he just real calmly said, well, when I was with the Rams, we beat them. You know? And now he did say that they gave up a lot of points. You know, he did say that like they shut him down or anything. But he was like, you know, hey, when I was with the Rams, we beat them. And yeah, we did a pretty good job. And, you know, Mahomes is obviously going to be a problem for anybody. But at the end of the day, you know, there's defenses to stop everybody. And so he was very confident. He's, you know, he just kind of in his old type country style. He's just kind of a pretty cool dude. So there was a lot of folks like on the radio station that were really excited and pumped up about hearing from him. And then I've started to see a lot of good, you know, feedback from listeners of the podcast. Like, man, that's a heck of a guest right there. And still kind of wish that he had become the Raiders defensive coordinator. But I think good things are coming from Gus Bradley. So I feel very positive about the direction the Raiders are going with the defensive coordinator, at least.
Exactly. And to me, that's one of the things I think for fans is when you talk about and like you said, you talked to him about the 3-4 versus the 4-3 and the differences and him talking about how people make more out of it than it needs to be. And I think that's because there's not really a way for, I think, the everyday fan. Now, look, we have good friends who come on this show like Marcus Johnson, BD Williams from Tape Don't Lie. They break down tape. Of course, Ted Nguyen from The Athletic does an amazing job. But that's all very technical. Like, I think for the average fan, just who wants to understand what they're watching, there's really not as much content. So if you're a content producer out there and you're a football guy or gal, then make sure you do something for people so they can simply understand. Because I think that's when you hear Wade Phillips talk about the differences in defense is, yeah, people get caught up on 4-3. They get caught in on terminology. But when you break it down and when you go into a game, you know, his defense versus his 3-4 defense versus the Chiefs versus like if they were playing the Raiders would be different, right? So you change by game by opponent, and I think that goes underrated often.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And so it should be interesting, man. It should be interesting to see if, you know, if he even gets onto another sideline. You know, it's very strange, really, in my opinion, that he didn't work in 2020. He hasn't picked up a DC job yet in 2021 for the 2021 season. You know, and I talk about John McClain all the time. He said that he thinks the best team for him to go to, or the best situation for him to go to instead, is a young coach like a Sean McVay was when they hired him in L.A., where they could just not worry about the defense. Just say, okay, I know that Wade's got this, and I could concentrate on the rest of the team. And that's what Sean McVay was able to do. If you go back, and this is something I said about Wade Phillips a long time ago on the show, was that you go back and look at his track record, man, he ain't going to be nowhere more than 4 years. I mean, right. 4 years is the max. So he's not a guy that sticks around, and he's not there for a long time. I think he's there. He does what he does. He gets the defense turned around. And I think that he probably wears on people. You know, I honestly do. I think that, yeah, you know, with his big personality, and he's a big, you know, players coach, and the players on the defensive side of the ball love playing for him. I think that starts to become a little bit of an issue sometimes in the, you know, in the facility or amongst the team. And so teams don't renew his contract, like the Rams. They didn't renew his contract. Once it expired, they just kind of let him go. And so I just think that that's the situation. So if there's a young coach, a first-time head coach in the league, maybe that's the guy that goes and pulls the trigger on Wade. But clearly John Gruden wasn't going to be that guy.
No, and it's interesting too, because when I was in corporate America doing public relations and doing digital marketing, when I would interview for jobs, people would always ask me, well, you know, kind of what's your thing? What are you about and all this? And that's what I would always say. I would always say, look, I'm not a dial tuner. If you want me to come in because you have something that's really well established and it's running smoothly, then I'm not your guy. I like to come in. I like to build. I like to face big challenges and create. And that's what I see when you say that about Wade Phillips. And that's why he's places 4 or 5 years, because right, I think he's the guy. He's the turnaround specialist. You want him, yep, to come in. You want him to turn around things. That's why I think a lot of Raider Nation really like the idea of him coming. And I know, you know, hey, look, the support for Gus Bradley is growing each day. And that's great. He's making good hires in his position coaches, and that looks great. So there's no going back on that. But I think with Wade Phillips, you know, you look at we talked yesterday, Q, about diversity hiring in the NFL. And then you got to wonder with Wade Phillips, is it not his record or the fact that he's been successful or that he only stays places 4 or 5 years? But is it the age? Now, does age go against you? You know, so there's an ageism, right, issue in the NFL. I mean, there's plenty of old coaches out there, too. But it's interesting to explore all that, but we'll have to see how it goes. By the way, speaking of coaching, we talked about earlier with Hondo, Kirby Wilson of the Raiders, of course, the running backs coach, is now interviewing for the role of offensive coordinator with Pete Carroll. Of course, he's got a history with Pete Carroll, coached with him in the past and played for him when he was a running back with the Patriots. Interesting. I was not expecting Kirby to be someone that would be interviewing for an OC position.
No, I mean, it wasn't something that was at the top of my mind, but I know he's a very well-respected coach. You, yeah, know what I mean? And so Pete Carroll, he's gotten rid of Schottenheimer and said that, you know, they had just differences as far as philosophies. Well, you know, Kirby is what? A running back coach. And, yeah, well, that was one of the big things that Pete Carroll said, is he wants to get back to the ground and pound. He wants to get back to the run game. He wants, you know, to be that team that they were when they were dominating, instead of, you know, just relying on Russell Wilson's arm. And so I can't say that I don't put the two and two together now. You know, again, it wasn't on my mind. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, I think this is going to happen. But now that it's happening, and now that he's interviewing for that, if they hit it off, I'm sure he's going to take that job. That's a heck of a promotion, becoming the offensive coordinator from the running back coach's position. And again, he's a really well-respected running backs coach, and I could see him doing some really good things with the running backs that they have in Seattle if they go and invest in another one, or if they just, you know, continue to groom the ones that they have there. But mm-hmm. he's really good at what he does, so I could see him taking that job and getting hooked up, and you know, and that's being a big loss for the Raiders.
Yeah, and obviously Frank Smith went to the Chargers. Now with Kirby Wilson interviewing with Seattle, and then Jim O'Neill, who was actually let go because of the hiring of Gus Bradley, the former defensive backs coach, who's a great guy, by the way. I understand his unit didn't perform up to standards, but he's getting the defensive coordinator position now at Northwestern. So. Yep. He goes into the Big 12 and or Big 10, excuse me, and it'll be interesting to see how that all works out. But you like to see guys, you know, hey, if it doesn't work out with one team, and Coach O'Neill, we had on the show before, he's a really good guy, and it's good to see him bounce back and find a role. All right, it's that time of the day. We turn over the microphone and we get some knowledge. That's Q. It's time for the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Peach.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip. Your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
Well, today, and this is going to be sounding weird, and sometimes I do that. Sometimes I go in different directions, but I gotta pay homage, man, and show respect and give a salute to Philip Rivers. You know, and I know that he was a nemesis of the Raiders, and he was one of the most hated guys amongst Raider Nation for his time that he spent with the Chargers. All his years, he was with the Chargers. Obviously, this last year, he was with the Colts. But man, you got to give that dude a lot of props. I mean, he went out there; he was a warrior. He was one of those guys that never missed a game. I mean, he was out there. It didn't matter how injured he was still going to play. You know, he was going to give you everything he had. And yeah, there was moments where you could see that, his skill set was starting to deteriorate, and that's why the Chargers moved on from him. And now they have, Justin Herbert, who's going to be a longtime thorn in the side of Raider Nation as well. But man, just all the trash talking that Philip Rivers gave to the Raider Nation and gave to the players while he's on the field. I mean, you just got to respect a dude like that. And one thing I could say is you wouldn't hate the guy if he wasn't good. You know what I mean? Like if he stunk as a quarterback, if he was terrible, then you sure wouldn't hate him. Like, I don't remember the last quarterback that the Broncos had that the Raiders actually hated, you know, maybe outside of Peyton Manning, and still you really can't hate Peyton Manning either. But I mean, still, you know, I mean, they didn't, John Elway probably, you know what I mean? And that's because he was great. He was a great quarterback. And so that's why you hated Elway. You know, he was one of those guys that you never thought that the game was over until it was absolutely over. That's the same thing you can say for Philip Rivers. Man, long 17-year career, talked a lot of trash, never cursed. I mean, he was his own guy. He was just, you know what I mean? He's just a different dude. And just like I hated LT, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson, and I told him straight to his face when I saw him at the Super Bowl, and even when I was at his inauguration for the Hall of Fame, his whatever, the introduction to the Hall of Fame, whatever it is. Anyway, I was there for that, and I told him straight up. I said, man, I couldn't stand you, but the reason is because you ran for like 400 yards a game against the Raiders. Like, I mean, it's like I felt like four touchdowns a game was guaranteed when you played against him. And that's just respect. And that's the same thing with Philip Rivers. So as he announced his retirement earlier today, I don't think it comes as a surprise to anybody. But you just got to give that dude a lot of props for 17 years, and especially 16 in the side of Raider Nation, all the battles on the field. And I'm not going to lie, kind of miss that, you know, even seeing the Raiders play the Chargers this past season and Justin Herbert, as good as he is, it just wasn't the same. You know, it wasn't Philip Rivers. It wasn't that dude that you want to beat him. You know, you want that team to beat him. So, it's just not the same. I'm sure, like I said, Justin Herbert's going to be very, very good, and he's going to be a thorn for a very, very long time. But you just got to give Philip Rivers his respect. So I just, for the Q-tip, just want to go ahead and give a salute to Philip Rivers on a hell of a career. And shout out to him during his retirement. And I know he's going to be a high school football coach, so he's going to keep on living the good fight, I guess.
Yeah, Q, it's funny, I the respect for him, and there's a lot of debate out there on Hall of Fame numbers, because he's got a lot of numbers.
He's a Hall of Famer,
he's got a lot of numbers. A lot of people who don't believe or agree with you or I on that point to his lack of winning, right? But then you look at guys that never won a Super Bowl, and Philip Rivers didn't get to a Super Bowl. Even he was one game away playing with a torn ACL, by the way, against the Patriots.
Right.
And so you look at that, and I, to me, the biggest accomplishment, honestly, because I can't do it on a daily basis, is the fact that he talked all that trash without cursing.
Right. Like, exactly. I don't know how to do it.
No. And I mean, hey, you talk about state, whether you like Philip Rivers or not, that's up to you. I don't really care. But if you could do that, to stay that true to yourself, and, you know, for him, it's about faith and all that kind of stuff. He's a Catholic. And a long story short is, when I was still in San Diego, it's 2010, before I moved to Kansas City for business, Philip used to come to our church. That's back when he had two or three kids. And so we used to see him in church. He was always a nice guy. It would be him and Steve Fisher, who's the former coach at San Diego State, basketball coach. And they used to come into our church, and he was always the nicest guy. He drove an old pickup. He wasn't, you know, pretentious and all that kind of stuff. So even though back then I was still in the Charger camp, I was a Charger fan because I grew up that way. I liked Philip Rivers as the person more than I even liked him as the quarterback, because I met him individually at church, and we shared that. It was a very, very cool thing. But the one thing, and I talked about it earlier, Q, when at the beginning of the show before you're on, what my winners and losers today, my loser today is the media ourselves. Because here's one thing, and I know this is going to be very personal, and I'm biased about it because I have a big family, but this ongoing joke about his number of kids. Now, I don't mind, you know, people mentioning it is passing. It's fine because it's remarkable that somebody in this day and age has 9 kids. Okay.
Right.
I have 5, but I think people use it in a really negative way. And I'm like, dude, like the guy has a big family. He's got money to do it, number one, which right. is a huge deal. You know, to have 9 kids, you talk about costs. I have 5 and I know how much it is. So that part of it, I think that today, when you have somebody who's incorruptible, so to speak, somebody who lives their values, somebody who believes what they believe, and just goes about their life doing it too, and then they're great on the football field, I think for some people, like they can't deal with that because they don't want to like the guy for all the reasons you talked about, which is competitive and respect, right? But then they want to dislike him for all these other reasons because he's kind of a good guy, even though you don't like him on the field or you think he's a whiny, you know, bitch or whatever you think he is. That's totally cool. So it's a really interesting dynamic, and I don't really see that with many other players in the league today. So it's going to be interesting to see the NFL without him and to see how he goes. I know he's going to go coach football, I think, down in Alabama with his son, who's got a pretty good arm and looks like he's taken after his dad. So, but you know, it's one of those old school quarterbacks that we kind of grew up with that now is going by the wayside as these young bucks that we're seeing in these AFC championship game on Sunday start to take over.
Yeah, I mean, he just, you know, a constant pro's pro. You know, he just, again, did things the right way. And, you know, I mean, it's easy to joke about the size of someone's family. That's cool, whatever. You know, the real joke is when it's like, oh, you got 9 kids and you got 9 baby mamas. That's when it's a problem, you know. Now there's a problem. You know, that's when we're starting to talk about
Antonio Cromartie.
Yeah, exactly. Antonio Cromartie and cats like that. And you know, and that's even still, hey, look, I don't care. As long as you handle your business and do what you got to do, right. It don't make no difference to me. I think it's funny, you know, just when, you know, people try to goof like that or whatever. But Philip Rivers was that dude, man. And he was a heck of a player. And even listening to him whenever he'd be mic'd up and just hearing the old shucks and the dadgummit. And even when he wrote his speech out, not his speech, but his little memo that he wrote out when he said that he was retiring, he said, you know, he even said dadgummit in that. I mean, it's just who he's very comfortable in his own skin. And that's something that I respect him a lot for. A lot of people aren't comfortable in their own skin. Philip Rivers absolutely was. He had no shame. If you didn't like him, that was fine. He was still going to do him, you know? And so I just thought that was always cool. And I have a place in my heart for anyone who could be comfortable in their own skin and just be comfortable doing them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, we look at betting this weekend. I know with your Locked On Bets podcast, Q, you and Lee are doing really well with that. What's the skinny for you guys so far on this game coming up on Sunday? Is it really just the Mahomes watch for now?
I mean, it's the Mahomes watch for now. Yeah, when we get down to Thursday and Friday, we'll really dig in and start really kind of concentrating on it. I'll tell you, though, quick funny story about the Bets podcast, man. We had on Big Monday Baylor, which I obviously cover Baylor in Central Texas. Baylor was playing Kansas, and they were a 9-point favorite, which is a lot. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of points for especially going up against Kansas. Like, are you kidding me? Like, Kansas always wins the Big 12, but they're a little down this year. So Lee said, hey, I'm going to take Kansas in this game to cover the spread. And I'm like, okay. And then I keep thinking, because I do cover Baylor, I'm like, man, I don't know. I don't feel great about it because Baylor, they go on runs and they'll be playing terrible for a while. Then they'll go on a run and they'll just blow you out. And he's like, yeah, but 9 points is a lot. It's still Kansas. They got pride. I was like, okay. All right, cool. That's what's up. So we did it as a level 3 lock, which is like the highest lock you can get. So that's one of those that's got to come through, you know, just because, I don't know, just feel good about yourself. So anyway, man, this game, I'm watching this game. I'm sitting at the house and I didn't go, but I'm watching it and all of a sudden Baylor pulls away at the end and they're up like 15 or 16 and there's only like 3 minutes left. I'm kept saying, oh damn it, we're gonna lose this game. Like, there's no way, there's no way that you know, we're gonna win this one. I mean, Baylor's gonna win the game and they're gonna blow them out, and it's not, you know, Kansas ain't gonna cover this, no way. And I promise you, man, Baylor turned the ball over a couple times towards the end and they were up 11. Yeah, they were up 11 and Baylor was trying to just dribble the ball out or the clock out, but there was like a 3-second differential in the time. And so all of a sudden they throw the ball up and Kansas gets a rebound and just dribbles like two or three dribbles and just heaves it up and it goes in. It's a three-pointer. And I was like, and I jumped out of my seat and I was like, oh my God, we won. Oh my God. And I don't get excited like that, but I was like, oh my God, we won this game.
And you didn't have money on it. You didn't.
And I had no money on it at all. And the wife's like, what are you talking about? And I go, 77.69, 77.69. I was like, do the math. How much is that? Because I'm thinking that I'm tripping. And she said, it's 8. And I said, oh my God, we won. The spread was 9. Kansas covered on that late just heave. And so, man, I was so pumped up. And Lee goes, yep, that is the thrill right there of gambling. And that's why so many people love to do it, because it's that rush right there. And I was like, man, I got a rush. And I didn't win a dime, but I got a rush just because we called it. You know, so anyway, that's a lot of fun. Doing the show is incredible, man. Lee is really good at what he does.
No, he is really great at what he does, and that's why you got to subscribe to Q and Lee's Locked On Bets podcast along with the Locked On Raiders podcast. All right, Q, I know you got to go off, get your show done for the day down in Central Texas. We'll talk back to you tomorrow.
All right, my man, appreciate you. Raider Nation, keep doing what you're doing. Tell Vinny I said what up, too. It's been a while.
I will do that for sure. He asked about you the other day. All right, we're going to step aside here. On the other side, we're back with Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Silver and Black Today. Here's Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Welcome back on this Wednesday. Scott Gulbranson and our sit-in guest co-host as well, Hondo Carpenter, with you. Thanks again to Q Myers for joining us for the last segment. He's off doing his show in Texas now, which is why he comes in and out. He drops in and out and has some fun with us, and then he's back out doing radio to the great people in the state of Texas. And we're back. And Hondo, continuing our conversation, I'm going to bring in our good friend, of course, Vinny Bonsignore, covers the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He also hosts a must-listen show that comes up right after us. That, of course, is In the Huddle with Vinny alongside Lincoln Kennedy, Raiders great. And Vinny, first of all, we were talking about earlier in the show, the Raiders and the offensive line. And of course, the Trent Brown question has been talked about. JT talked about it today. I've talked about it. I know you've talked about it on your show with Lincoln and with others. You look at the Trent Brown situation and what they're going to do here with this offensive line. To me, you know, that decision is going to be a domino, right, in what they're going to do. Do you think they feel comfortable with some of the younger players to fill in, or do you think that maybe that could be a spot if they address defense in free agency or otherwise, that they could actually be in the hunt for an offensive tackle somewhere in the draft, because it's a pretty good draft for offensive tackles?
Yeah, it is, and I do think that – I don't see that there's much of a way in which Trent Brown is back on the team, short of him taking a pay cut.
Right.
Just remember that his money for the next 2 years is not guaranteed. The guaranteed portion of his contract has already been paid in full. There's no ramifications if the Raiders walked away from him. In fact, it helps create a lot of money under the cap. Or significant amount of money under the cap. So, however, you know, there is a level of when he's on the field, he's pretty darn good. And do you want to, leave yourself vulnerable by just walking away from him without at least giving it a chance to say, hey, you know, we'd like you back, but not at the number, that you're currently sitting at, and create a little bit more comfort level for yourself that, you're paying him less money, and so with the hope that he's going to be able to play. This is a guy who's played 16 games in 2 years. As my good friend Stu Lance, color analyst for the Lakers, would say, that ain't going to get it done. And he got $37 million for that. So that's really not going to get it done, and it didn't get it done. So, that would have to be a conversation that they're going to have. And if he's not accepting of those coming back at a number that's way more palatable for the Raiders, then the easy thing to do is just to walk away, because I don't see any way that you bring him back at his current number.
Hey, Vinny, it's Hondo. You do such a great job covering the team. I'm proud to call you a colleague. I want to get your opinion. Had a couple people ask me about LaMarcus Joyner, about his contract, where he sits. What do you think about him? Do you think where he sits moving forward in their plans? I know what I think. I want to hear what you think.
Well, a couple of things. You can create some savings as well. I think that there is a little bit of a $2 million, I think, cap hit for LaMarcus, but you'd also be saving $8-something million or so if you walked away from him. I think some of that is also predicated on how confident are you that Amik Robertson is ready to fill that role, or that you can fill that role, and it's a critical role. Somewhere along the line through free agency or the draft. Ideally, it's Amik Robertson. That would solve a lot of problems and give you a lot of comfort to be able to move on from LaMarcus. Now, in LaMarcus's defense, and I covered him when he was with the Rams, his best years were when Wade Phillips moved him to safety. He started out as a cornerback with the Rams and, frankly, was just okay at it, nothing great. But his best years were when they moved him to safety, and that's where he took off and then earned himself, the new contract with the Raiders. And unfortunately for LaMarcus, when he gets to the Raiders, they have a big need at slot cornerback, and need overrode, his best position. And so He was basically playing at a position that, he hasn't played all that great in his career, and certainly not the position that he's played the best. And so that's unfortunate for LaMarcus. And I know he takes a lot of grief, online, but, in his defense, he has been playing out of position relative to the position that he plays best.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of the fans who took him to task really were sort of on his side, Vinny, because they would always say, why aren't you playing him in a natural position? And you hit on it right there, because it was out of need. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Vinny, is the Raiders coaching situation. Of course, Gus Bradley comes in on defense, and they had the changes there. But on offense, Frank Smith goes to the Chargers. He's the running game coordinator. That's a promotion for him. And now Kirby Wilson, as reported today, is interviewing for the offensive coordinator position. He's the running backs coach for the Raiders. He's interviewing for the OC position with Pete Carroll, someone he played for and worked with before up in Seattle. What are you hearing on Kirby Wilson and his chances to get that big promotion? He's one of the most respected guys in the league.
Yeah, and while the Raiders, or no team wants to lose valuable coaches that they really respect, but by the same token, if he can further his career by becoming an offensive coordinator, I think there's high fives and celebration. That's just how this business works. Disappointment, selfishly, because you'd have to fill a role that he's provided stability and competence at, but proud and happy for him as a friend because he's moving on in his career. So I think that, there's mixed feelings, obviously, but more rooting for him to go get himself an offensive coordinator job, with the Seattle Seahawks, and then deal with whatever, ramifications are from that. You'd have to go find a new running backs coach. That could open up a door for somebody else, another young coach on the upcome. And, that's just kind of how this works. It's very rare that you ever return your entire staff intact. A long time ago, somebody, said to succeed in this business, you have to be adaptable and you have to be able to react to ever-changing staffs, players, rosters, all of that type of stuff. And just keep on moving ahead. So, I think if they have to replace him, at running backs coach, they'll understand and they'll be happy for him.
Vinny, for you and I, I'm excited about covering this offseason because there's going to be the salary cap apocalypse that, again, we think is probably going to be 20 million less, but could go as much as 30. We don't know. The Raiders are going to be in a good spot because they have flexibility of cutting some guys to become buyers. So we don't know what they'll do in the draft because we got to see free agency. I have not covered the team as long as you. This is only my first offseason. But I've got to tell you, I think this is going to be an exciting offseason, and more than most. What do you think?
Yeah, it is. And I think one thing that that really helps the Raiders is, as opposed to the last couple of offseasons, I'm not saying they have one singular need, but their needs are very much much more narrow now than they've ever been. It's the defense. They need to fix the defense. The offense needs some tinkering. You might have to go find a right tackle, to replace Trent Brown. But I think that with the needs much more narrow, that's creates some excitement because you're closing in. And this, as far as the salary cap, I'm hearing that it might not go down as much as people have worried that it would. The numbers that I've heard just yesterday, really, were, you know, $185 to $190 million, which would be a huge boost, you know, for the Raiders and for a lot of other teams that if it goes down $20 million, as we sit right now, the Raiders would be about $7 million over it. So if they can, you know, organically be able to create some space, you know, a little bit of more relief for themselves just by the number being higher than what it was anticipated being, that obviously helps. But there's also going to be some hard decisions. Trent Brown, Terrell Williams, perhaps LaMarcus Joyner, Marcus Mariota, Richie Incognito, all of those players are prime candidates to be the quote-unquote dreaded cap casualty. And but in doing so, it would create a good $40, maybe even $50 million under the salary cap, depending what that salary cap is. So that is a good chunk of change to go start getting that defense fixed.
Vinny Bonsignor, who is the host of In the Huddle with Lincoln Kennedy, coming up next here on Raider Nation Radio. Also, the beat writer for the Las Vegas Review Journal covering the Raiders. Vinny, I know I talked to you about this the other day, but I want to ask you maybe for some ideas around if the Raiders were going to approach some of the guys that are under contract that they can't just cut loose, that's not going to free up cap space, including people like Derek Carr. Who are the prime candidates that they, if they really want to free up money, if they're going to go make some big, bold moves, who are the guys that are at the top of the list that they might approach about restructuring their contracts?
Well, you know, I would think that at some point you got to start thinking about Derek Carr, first of all. You know, he's underpaid at what he's on books for the next 2 years. And furthermore, none of it's guaranteed. And so that's, you know, an uneasy position to be if you're a franchise quarterback. But there's ways for the Raiders to be able to, you know, work with Derek on a new contract that actually provides some salary cap space relief next year. I'm sure I would imagine that there will be discussions about that. But I don't know if you necessarily need to, you know, renegotiate many other contracts outside of the players that we just talked about. The good news for the Raiders, they're very young. They have a lot of contracts that are under control for the next few years. So that's, you know, cost certainty, and that's a good position to be in. But short of the guys that we just talked about, I'm not so sure that, you know, there's many of those kind of candidates to come talk about renegotiating their deals just simply by what those deals look like right now. And then, you know, and then on the other hand, you got to start thinking, like I said, Derek Carr. You have to start thinking about Colton Miller. His contract is soon to be up, and I think he's earned himself a spot in the long-range plans at left tackle. Nelson Aguilar, who is a free agent, you have to start, you know, trying to figure out how to retain him. So there's a lot of, you know, that going on. But as far as the renegotiations of current players, I don't think that that's going to be there's going to be a whole lot of that. I could be wrong, because you never know, but
But you're right. The most valuable thing in the NFL is when you have impact players on rookie deals, right? Because that gives you the opportunity to go out. And that's why I agree with Hondo and what you've said in the past too, Vinny, which is this should be a really interesting and dynamic, I think, offseason for the Raiders as they clear up some of that space and go get difference makers, especially on that defensive side of the ball. All right, Vinny, have a great show. Q wanted me to pass it on to you as well, since he hasn't talked to you in a while. And we appreciate you being here. Yeah, I will do that. And we'll talk to you tomorrow, my man.
All right, have a good one, you guys. Nice talking to you.
All right, there you go, Vinny Bonsignor. And Hondo, as always, man, I appreciate you being with us on Mondays and Wednesdays, and I look forward to talking to you on Monday and recapping what we see in the AFC and NFC championship games.
I can't wait, buddy. Thank you for sharing your airwaves with me.
All right. For Hondo Carpenter, I am Scott Colbranson, and back in the studio, our engineer is Chris Chapman. Thanks to all of you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Danny Heifetz from The Ringer will join us. We'll preview Saturday's game. We will not have a show on Friday. I'm off Friday. Yes, I'm taking a day off Friday. So tomorrow will be our last show of the week. We'll go over the whole AFC-NFC championship game with Danny. Also joining me will be Evan Grote. He'll co-host with me. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow here on Raider Nation Radio.